Pardon the interruption, but I'm Bob Ryan. We'll bounce out today, so you get the old guy special.
I'm Tony Kornheiser. Hey, you kids, get off my lawn!
Oh, gee whiz, mister! I brought you hard candy!
What do we have, Dennis the Menace in here today? What is this? I mean, you know, Bobby, they don't probably know how old we are in dog years.
No,
kids. It's like well into the thousands
go,
of dog don't years.
Go there. Don't go there.
Welcome to PTI, boys and girls. In today's episode, the Raiders want McNabb, Michael Jordan versus Mikhail Prokhorov, and the Xavier women go down in excruciating fashion. But we begin today with the NCAA tournament. Looking over a field of Butler, Michigan State, West Virginia, and Duke, odds makers have made Duke the favorite. Yes, Duke is the only number one seed still playing, but Duke was also said to be overseeded as a number one and surely the first number one seed out. Bobby, do you make Duke the favorite?
I'm stubborn. No, I kept picking against Duke right from the second round on, saying they will not get through this team, that team.
Well, they
now,
did.
All right, now here they are. And amazingly, they win games. One day Shire goes scoreless from the floor. Another day Singler goes scoreless from the floor.
And they're still playing.
They keep winning. I'm picking West Virginia 1, Duke 2, Michigan State 3, Butler 4 in that order.
I can think you can throw a blanket over everybody, but if you look at the Duke-West Virginia game, I could make this case. West Virginia, I think, had a harder tournament to go through in the Big East than the ACC where Duke won. They had a common opponent of Georgetown. Georgetown crushed Duke. And West Virginia beat Georgetown twice. West Virginia's already beaten a number one seed. My problem is, if they let Duke shoot the way they let Kentucky shoot, Duke will beat them.
They won't let them do that. They'll make them do something else. Bob Huggins' trademark from the time he came at Cincinnati is defense, and nothing has changed, and that's a major reason he's here.
Kentucky got a million shots, they just missed them.
Good mid-sized athletes. I could make a case for all four teams. How about Michigan State, the team that I saw play in St. Louis, and is playing without one of two teams playing without its point guard.
They don't have a point guard.
They don't have, West Virginia doesn't
What's
have its
the case
point guard.
For
and Duke's playing without one the whole season.
What's the case for Butler? They beat a number one and a number two.
They can defend, and who knows what the home court's going
to
be.
But isn't it hard? It's hard to let your mouth say Butler will win the NCAA tournament.
Yes,
and that's
it is.
Hard.
And no disrespect, but no. Right. In this field, I still think they're fourth. But I'll root for them. Now, there are great wins, and there are tough losses. Now, Jeanette, Poland went coast to coast for a buzzer-beating layup that sent Stanford to the Final Four for the second year in a row. That's a great win. But for Xavier, and especially D.D. Jernigan, this was beyond a tough loss. Jernigan missed two totally open, potentially game-winning layups to set up the Poland shot. Okay, Tony, was this game won or was it lost?
Well, it was won because it was a tie game. If the Stanford player doesn't go all the way down the court and do a Danny Ainge, they're going into overtime. So in that sense, it was won. But those shots that were missed, that's brutal.
I will categorically,
that girl will always believe that
categorically say I have never felt sorrier for an athlete in a circumstance like that in my life than that poor young lady missed two. They were utterly, people have to understand if they haven't seen them, uncontested layups. One from the right side of the basket, one after they miraculously got the ball back from the left.
Which didn't even hit the rim.
She's crumpled on the floor. The game's still ready to go on. The coach has to come out and pick her up. How can your heart not ache for that young lady?
Especially since she's a senior. This is possibly the last game that she's ever going to play. I mean, if there are, as people say, lessons to be learned in sports. If there are, then what you hope is that within a week or so, this young woman gets up there and says, that was the toughest thing I ever went through, but I'm better for it. I love the fact that my teammates picked me up and all of that. You hope that will happen.
Who she's going to hear from? I bet you, Freddie Brown. I bet she hears from Fred Brown. I bet she gets on the phone. I bet the Coach Thompson said, you better give that young lady a call.
Yeah.
It's heartbreaking. It was heartbreaking.
The New Jersey Nets got a big win last night. Not only did they beat a playoff team at home, the San Antonio Spurs, but that was the Nets' 10th win of the season, assuring themselves that they will not be the worst NBA team of all time. Indeed, the Nets have won three of their last four games. They have tons of cap space. They're looking at a high draft pick. And they're bringing in a new owner with oodles of rubles. Reason for optimism, Bobby?
Yes. They have assets. Let's start with Brook Lopez. Mm-hmm. 33 double-doubles. He's a 19-9 guy, and he's just getting his feet wet in this league. He's an asset. I honestly thought you could make a case for him being in the All-Star game. The backcourt has value. Courtney Lee and Devin Harris. Chris Douglas Roberts. Yes, there are assets. And all the things that you described, yes, there's reason for optimism.
You know, if you have a high draft pick in a year where there's somebody great out there like Michael Jordan, even though he went third, Akeem Olajuwon went first, Tim Duncan, who went first, then you say you can turn around from 10 wins to 30 or 35 or 40. There's nobody out there like that this year.
No.
If you win 10, you win 10 on merit because you stink. And you're not going to win 40 the next year without some fabulous draftee, and that doesn't exist.
No, well, who's talking about winning 40? I'm talking about improvement, optimism. They're going into play in a better building in Newark. It's going to be better than the dead zone, which is the Meadowlands.
Well, and then they're going to go. They're going to.
But
go
I mean,
to
I'm just saying. I'm going back to what I said. Here's what they first thing they need. They need a coach. I mean, thank you, Kiki, but go back to the front office.
Okay.
They need a real coach. But I am telling you, there are building blocks. And let's say
the owner has $17 billion. Does that mean he will get a great free agent this year?
Great. There's a lot of big names out there. They need luck. They need somebody to go against the grain. No, they probably won't get one of those guys. No, that's not what's going to do it. All right, now, another day, another Donovan McNabb speculation. Well, it's clearly available, Tony. So how does Oakland strike you? Yeah, Oakland. Donovan could soak up Al Davis's wisdom, learning how the Raiders have lost 11 games or more, seven straight seasons. Now, what's in it for the Raiders? Are they close enough to contention to give up on Jamarcus Russell and Bruce Gretkowski and then surrender a good draft pick or two? Or are they just playing crazy, as most people think they are?
This has to feel like exile to Donovan McNabb. This has to feel like he's on an ice floe somewhere. I mean, I understand he understands that it's a business.
Yeah.
But to be tied to Andy Reid the way he was in Philadelphia for 10 years and to be sent to the worst possible circumstance in the league has to be devastating.
Well, I mean, Oakland has been, dare we say, in a black hole the last 7 years. They do have some assets. The wide receiving core has a little promise. Hayward Bay, Chris Schillens, Lewis Murphy, a good tight end in Zach Miller.
Yeah.
But they need a line. I mean, and that plus there's that aura about that franchise that will hover over
well,
as long
but,
as you
but
know
if
who's
you're
still
asking, is it, you know, can Donovan McNabb sufficiently improve the team? He can. Here's why. Jamarcus Russell is one of the worst overall number one picks in history.
Right.
And his completion percentage is terrible. Donovan McNabb is a 60% career guy. In the last 3 years, he had a 60, a 61, and a 60. So right away, the young receivers are going to get the ball in their hands a lot more than they ever got it before. McFadden's a very good running back. I'm just saying that if you're Donovan McNabb and you're a high-maintenance guy, you're thinking, how did this happen to me?
Well,
how can I be going to Oakland?
But he is a thorough professional, I think.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, let's talk about another thing. West Coast offense. It's been his whole life. And Al is, dare say it, a vertical guy. I don't know. Doesn't make a lot of sense, this one. No. Let's hope it doesn't happen.
Al Skinner won 247 games at Boston College. That makes him the winningest coach ever at BC. He also went seven times to the NCAA tournament since 2001. And today he got fired. Bob, you've watched Boston College play basketball for 40 years. Why did BC get rid of Al Skinner?
Because what he was doing so successfully for years is no longer working and was not likely to get better in the near future. He was successful at both Rhode Island and Boston College because an assistant coach named Bill Cohen got him all the players, including between the cracks guys that Al knows how to coach up. Bill Cohen's now head coach at Northeastern. You can see the systematic decline of Boston College basketball, and it's not he's not going to change his own ways, which are very peculiar, unique to him. He's not a hard-working guy. He's a CEO kind of guy, and it wasn't going to work at BC.
That's your alma mater.
Yes.
So please don't be insulted with what I'm going to say. This is a terrible job right now, and it's a terrible job because they chose to go to the ACC. BC recruits Northeastern kids. You can't sell them on playing a schedule where everybody is, you know, in Florida or North Carolina or South Carolina, a place like that. If they want to go to the ACC, they're going to go to Duke, they're going to go to North Carolina, they're going to go to Maryland. I just think this crushes their recruiting base because there's no reason to go there.
Except that they haven't been recruiting from the Northeast for the last several years anyway. They had the best component was from California and Texas.
But not
they
from the South.
They don't get anybody local. No, it's
isn't it easier to recruit to go to the Big East, to play Big East basketball?
I think that's a wash. I don't think it has anything to do with anything. I think it all has to do with how Al no longer had the guy to get him the players. Also, one other thing. Al has a very inflexible system that requires a special player and no running.
So you're for this.
Oh,
you're
it's necessary. It's a necessary thing.
A
and Al
Island.
Did a great job for them to a point.
Long Island. Hempstead. Let's take a break. When we return, Butler coach Brad Stevens on making the Final Four as a teenager.
And later, who should be the Masters favorite? Ernie or Tiger?
That's really not close. That's not even a...
Get the latest soccer news both on and off the field with the SoccerNet podcast. Oh! Download it now at the iTunes Music Store and at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Brad Stevens is 88-14 as the head coach of Butler. He's just 33. He looks 22, and so I hate him. We welcome Brad Stevens to this program. You played it cool, but be honest. aren't you a little bit surprised to find yourself in the Final Four?
Well, you know, I don't think you even take time to be surprised. You're just worried about what's next, and what's next is a pretty daunting task in playing Michigan State. But I think it'll probably hit home for me personally. If it hasn't hit home for our players, I would say it'll definitely hit home for all of us on Thursday when we walk into Lucas Oil.
Now, older folks like us like to trumpet the value of experience, but do you find that your youth is in any way an advantage?
You know, I don't know if it's an advantage. All I know is that, it is what, we are what we are. and I'm young enough to have certainly remember playing and certainly remember being a part of a team and the ups and downs that go with the season. But at the same time, I'm pretty well removed from that part of my life. And I think that, what we're trying to do here is just continue in a way that has been built before us and try to do the best that we can. And, I don't think that there's any doubt that I wouldn't be sitting here, and certainly our program wouldn't be sitting where we are without the mentors and the people that have put us in place to do this.
We tend to associate statistical analysis in sports with baseball more than other sports, but we've read that you have embraced statistical analysis. Can you give us a specific insight that it has given you that you otherwise would not have had?
Well, I think that every game you're looking for what the other team's tendencies are, and certainly you can watch film and watch film and watch film, and definitely do enough of that. Our staff does enough of that, but at the same time, what we're looking for are statistical things that'll lead us into see what the teams are really trending towards with regard to what they want to do. Obviously, if you saw us play both times this weekend, we were trying our best not to let Routens or Poland touch the ball, let alone shoot the ball for Syracuse and Kansas State. And we did a pretty good job of that for the most part. But, when you're even breaking down guys like that, you're trying to watch film or you're trying to figure out, which way do they like to go? Which direction do they like to go? Which hand do they like to pull up with? All of those things that go into this. And sometimes it's, I know, again, we're not the coaches that have written the book on this. We're followers in all of this. But certainly our guys have embraced the scouting portion. And that's why they've been able to be successful along with they're just easy to coach. They want to do things well. They want to do things together. It has a lot less to do with me, and it has a lot more to do with them.
Flying chest bumps aside, you seem to have a serene manner on the sidelines. Were you ever a hothead, or were you always this calm?
I like to win. I think that certainly when I don't win, I haven't always handled it well throughout the course of my lifetime, but I've kind of derived that from the people before me. Again, I thought Coach Licklider, who I worked here with at Butler and really spent a lot of time around and really studied, our guys always played with such poise in such high-pressure situations because he had such poise. And the way he carried himself and the way that, our guys followed that. And that really stood to me, and I think I've taken more from him than necessarily that's a personality trait that I have.
Well, we're going to get you out of here on this. You are clearly the hot young coach in the country, and you're going to get a lot of offers. Do you worry about balancing any loyalty to Butler with the ability to listen to what's out there?
Well, there's no question I'm first and foremost loyal to Butler. And I think any time that you're in any situation, you never want to speak in absolutes, but Butler has been unbelievable to me, been unbelievable to my family. I grew up 20 minutes from here. A lot of my friends, a lot of my family still live here, and it's really been a special place. And I always say this, where else in the country have you been able to win, 29 games a year, coach 4 academic All-Americans, make 3 NCAA tournament appearances, and now get a chance to play in a Final Four in your hometown? There aren't many better places around, in my opinion.
Thank you so much for joining us, Brandon. Best of luck.
Thank you.
We're taking a break. When we return, who is the surer number one draft pick, John Wall or Sam Bradford?
And if you're playing horse with the president, you play to win?
No.
Oh, come on.
I don't think you do. No.
What's he going to do? Send you a... What's he going to do?
No. The answer is no, you don't. No.
Racing fans, get the latest news from NASCAR from the J-Ski Podcast featuring Mark Garrow. Download for free at iTunes or on the Pod Center page at ESPNradio.com.
I like Bob Ryan, but that won't stop me from humiliating him in toss-up.
Here we go.
What's first?
Toss-up, who should be the Masters favorite, Ernie Els or Tiger Woods?
I got Tiger. I don't care if Ernie Els wins this week for three in a row. He has never won a Masters. I believe Tiger has won a Masters multiple times. And more importantly, Tiger hand-picked this tournament with the knowledge that if he can come in and be great right away, everything is gone from the inroads that every other player made against him that they're even with him.
Oh, and that's just such a given.
I think Tiger will win this tournament.
I think you're out of your mind. First of all, I agree with you on Ernie Els. But secondly, Tiger, stop it. Let's go. Let's talk about something. Mm-hmm. The assumption by people who aren't doing their homework that this is a course that he owns. He owned, past tense, the Masters. They have Tiger-proofed it. He hasn't won since 2005. He's only broken 70 twice his last 12 rounds.
Who's the best
what
player
do you call
in the
that?
World? Who's the best player
Tiger
in the world?
Woods.
Okay, he's the favorite.
He's not winning this match.
He's the favorite. He wins.
Makes the cut
next
to be lucky.
Toss up, sure, number one pick, John Wall or Sam Bradford?
I think the critical word here is sure. How can Sam Bradford be a sure number one pick if the last two times we've seen him, he's hobbling off the field holding his shoulder because his whole arm might fall off? Now, if he's a great quarterback, that's going to be better than Wall because a great quarterback puts you in title contention for 10 years. But at worst, Wall is going to be a 10-year starter, so surer right now is Wall.
I see far more variables with Bradford. I'm with you on this one. It's definitely Wall in both cases. One, I think he's a better basketball player than Bradford as a football player.
Do you?
Wall is really, really good. And don't forget he's a freshman, and that he did tail off a little bit from the December Wall, but he has special qualities. If he's lucky enough to get in the right circumstance, he's going to be great from the start, and eventually it's going to be great. Bradford, are we talking all-time great here? We're not talking.
We could be. You never know.
I don't think so.
If you're a great quarterback, you keep your team in contention for 10 years.
The answer's Wall.
Next.
Toss-up, who'll be a better NBA owner, Michael or Mikhail?
Well, Michael certainly has a checkered career so far as an executive. He's made terrible, terrible draft picks, but he's made some very intriguing and good trades. Mikhail has more money than Michael. He's got $17 billion. That's a huge start. Oh, I don't know who's going to be better, but I think that they could hold parts of the owners' meetings in a VIP club at Scores.
Mikhail is intriguing, and it's a new type of person we haven't dealt with before. And we don't know.
A Russian billionaire.
And we don't know how overbearing and hands-on he's going to be, how much he thinks he's going to know about basketball. We know Michael knows basketball, although he was a lousy executive.
He still
knows more basketball than Mikhail. Here's my question to Michael. What's this rush to judgment? And why is this applause about Michael Jordan being an owner from the league? And nobody has said, isn't anybody remotely worried that some night in Atlantic City, he's going to put the team up for a poker game, or someday he's going to double down on the back nine and put the team up? Aren't they concerned about Michael's gambling?
I don't need your chips. Here's the roster. Put it on number 8.
Don't laugh.
Next.
Last one. Toss up. What should Clark Kellogg do in Thursday's horse game with the president?
Now,
beat him or let him win?
Whoops. Hey. I don't mean to cut off the voice of God there. Kellogg was a pro, so it would be terribly embarrassing if he were to lose to Obama when giving the appearance of trying hard. So he should obviously throw this thing. Obama, I guess, is good for a president. I guess he's better than William Howard Taft. But I don't know how good a player he really is. I'm hoping Harry Smith wins this thing because I like Harry Smith.
Well, William Howard Taft set a better pick. We know that
He certainly did. Couldn't get by him.
There's no reason.
He was the cousins of his
day. There is no reason for Clark Kellogg to do anything but to try to kick the president's butt. That would earn him a lot. Oh, positively.
Oh, I don't know.
That would earn him a lot more respect.
Ooh.
The president goes into this as Barack Obama, hoop freak.
What if he gets blacked?
Barack Obama, leader of the
letters.
No, you go get him and you'll earn his admiration and probably a cabinet post in his second administration.
Really?
Yeah.
I hammered you.
No way.
Time for one more break. It's still to come. Yao Ming, remember him? Gives the latest update on his mending foot.
And Tim Tebow visits with Bill Belichick. Four number twos, Tom.
So you think the Patriots will draft him?
Four number twos.
Will they?
Is that a good risk?
Yes.
Thank you.
Oh, yes.
We agree.
Yes, definitely.
See? All right.
You know, I like you much better than Levitar.
Oh, that's nice.
We're on. You know what? You do a terrible job. Happy 70th birthday, Jerry Lucas. This is how we skew older, boys and girls. At Ohio State 50 years ago, Jerry Lucas was considered the best basketball player in America. He made the finals 3 years running and won once, had a very good pro career, and is oddly famous for his ability to memorize anything and everything.
Let me put it this way. Of all the people who have ever memorized the Manhattan telephone directory, he had the best jump shot.
Happy anniversary, Duke. On this day, 19 years ago, the Blue Devils ended UNLV's run in an undefeated season with a 79-77 victory in the national semifinals. Last undefeated team is Bobby Knight's Indiana of 1976. So we're 34 years and counting. You think we'll ever see an undefeated team again?
Never say never. You know, that Florida team, the second year, was good enough to do it.
But they didn't do it.
They didn't do it. But I'm saying it's possible.
Happy trails to the Duke women's team. They were sent out of the tournament last night by Brittany Griner and Baylor. Griner had 9 more blocks, giving her a record 35 so far in the tournament. Griner is destined to be the greatest force to this point in women's college basketball, but I still don't think she can beat UConn this year.
Just a slightly taller speed bump on their way to the championship. That's
you think,
all
yeah, you
this
think
year.
UConn
right,
was right. Exactly. Trying to find out we messed up reality.
So were you serious? Jerry Lucas had the entire phone book memorized from A to Z?
A to Z.
I don't know if I believe that. Maybe 3 pages. A to Z?
A to Z.
I forgot what it's like to work with someone in the show who actually gives you stats. Bob Ryan, the stat about Tiger Woods shooting under 70 just twice in his last 12 rounds, that gobsmacked me. Woo.
Gobsmacked. So you're out of the show then, right? So that's it? You're
no,
done?
No. Steve Lavin and St. John's, you believe it? Believe it because it's true. It's happening.
Steve Lavin. That's shout nice. Out. Sweet
yes,
shout
out to. In the game on Saturday, Michigan State and Butler, why you love college basketball. Two players who will never be in the NBA, but you wonder why. Draymond Green of Michigan State, the roly-poly 6'6", and Willie Beasley of Butler. They're wonderful college players.
I'm shouting out to Voyeur, which is the bondage-based strip club in L.A., where the Republicans are going to hold their national convention in 2012.
Okay.
We're taking a break. There's more PTI to come, including an ambidextrous pitcher.
We'll be back in a few minutes. Until then, let's toss it up to SportsCenter.
Good night, Canada. Voyeur. Be there or be square.
Voyeur.
Welcome back to the PTI program. Okay, Bobby, ambidextrous pitcher Pat Vendetti on the mound for the Yankees in a split squad game. Ambidextrous pitchers worth the price of admission?
Oh, positively. I think it's a fascinating topic. You know, I think we have like one per century. In the 19th century, there was Tony Mullane, the Apollo of the box, who won a lot of games. Greg Harris, you remember him with the Red Sox and other teams? He desperately begged Lou Gorman to be allowed to throw left-handed as well as right-handed, and he could do it. We saw him, and then you have this kid. What an asset if it's for real.
Well, okay, if you are as good from one side and the other, you eliminate the opposing manager's ability to go lefty-righty in a batting switch.
Boom, like
so you do that.
That.
But it, you know what? It creeps me out. It is so freakish to think of a guy going from
even
side
the glove,
to side.
Even the glove. They have a special six-fingered glove that looks a little
How
odd.
How could you be as good lefty and righty?
Look,
my left hand, the only thing I could do was hold
this.
A phone.
There are any number of famous athletes who you thought were left-handed who actually were natural righties.
Okay.
They
became righties.
I mean, excuse me, the other way around.
Then they became lefty.
Larry Bird, everything he does in life is left-handed. Do you ever see him? He's a right-handed shooter. Danny Ainge that way. Brooks Robinson was a lefty. All right?
Okay, but they went to the majors. Whatever their sport was, they were predominantly one-sided.
Well, that's an odd thing.
Is this not freakish?
But think about this.
Is that the freakiest thing
in the world?
Think
about another value. If they were really good and really were equally good at both, that's another pitcher you don't need on your staff.
Right, and how many have there been so far exactly?
I could pitch 400 innings a season.
And how many have made it exactly?
Not since 1887.
Great.
No.
1 minute left. Let's go to the big finish. The Lakers lost to the Hornets last night. They're just 8-5 in the last 13. Cause for concern?
Are you kidding? They will be ready when the bell rings. Now, UTEP hired Tim Floyd to be its basketball coach. You surprised?
A little bit, but he has a history there. He assisted Don Haskins.
Yeah, right.
Yao Ming tells Yahoo he's about 30% recovered from his broken foot.
I'm trying to do the math here, but I think that means he'll be ready by the 2012 All-Star game. Kenyon Martin tells Yahoo that he may not be able to play again this year. Now, what does that mean for the Nuggets?
Why is everybody talking to Yahoo? That's what I want to know. The MLS Cup will be held in Toronto. What's the best thing about Toronto?
Well, a lot of things, but one thing I like is a great dive bar called the Rex Hotel. Tim Tebow visited with the Patriots in the last few days. That a good fit?
If there's anything we learn is that people who go to the Patriots max out. So
four
it could be a great
number
fit.
Twos.
Last one. Wizards have lost 15 straight. Will the Rockets make it 16 tonight?
Where's the game? It would be in Houston. That would be a yes.
We're out of time. We'll try and do better the next time. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
And I'm Bob Ryan. Now you check out the PTI podcast on iTunes. Let's go back to Bristol.
Michael Steele of the RNC. Go to your room and not in voyeur.